You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
Okay, good afternoon again, everyone. Thank you for coming back for this third and final session, which is going to be, I think, a very important one, as it has to do with the European single energy market. Electricity sector urgently needs to be redesigned. We all know that. There is no single internal energy market for the moment, 28, and as we heard in the earlier sessions, quite fragmented, very little interconnections, although I think work is ongoing on that. We have with us four panelists who are going to tackle these issues. Let me start with Marie-Pierre Fauconnier. She's chairwoman of the Belgian National Regulatory Authority for Energy, CREG. Marie-Pierre, merci d'être là. Michel Mathieu, head of EU strategy at Électricité de France, EDF. Thank you for being here as well. Simon Skillings, senior associate at Third Generation Environmentalism, E3G. Thank you, Simon. And last but not least, we're going to start with you actually, Mathieu Bertstorfer. I think I said it right. European Commission Director for Energy Policy. Thank you very much for coming. My co-moderator is Siobhan, and you're going to take over.
Yes, and for anyone who wasn't here earlier, my name is Siobhan Hall, and I'm a journalist for Platts. So we're going to kick off with Mechtild, and the subject of the session is redesigning Europe's electricity markets, and the question is, do we need to redesign Europe's electricity markets, and how should that be done, and what is the Commission doing about it?
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me today. I think it's really a good timing, in a way, because, as you know, we launched the Energy Union in February. We launched a public consultation on the electricity market design in July. And there now, the deadline was 8th of October for all the replies, and we got 320. We are still expecting a few, and we are open to that. And I would say there are many, many replies from industry associations, industry federations, individual companies. That's more than half, even 60-65%. We have half of our member states, and we have obviously NGOs, academia, TSOs, and DSOs and others. So I think we got rather big amount of replies. Obviously, as we had more than 20 questions, also to study the answer will take some time. I think the first occasion where our commissioner will present some of the results is at the Energy Council on the 26th of November, where there is a first kind of policy debate on the future market design. And then, as you probably know, we will integrate all these replies and prepare a proper impact assessment and some legislative changes in a package by the end of next year, 2016. So this is the planning. Why do we do this new market design for electricity? I think we all aware that the market has changed in the last 5 years. In particular, we have much more renewables, and by 2030, we will have 45 to 50% of the energy sources in the electricity sector by renewables. Then technology has advanced with all the possibilities we have with smart homes, smart metering, smart grids. And here I would slightly disagree to the statement that nothing has happened. And I think the markets are not yet completed, certainly not for electricity, but we have made some major progress. First, in market coupling, nearly all markets are coupled, and we expect all of them. And we have done, that is more technical work, but very important in order to have the cross-border flow, the network codes. And we are quite rather confident that all of the network codes in electricity will be adopted by the end of the year. So I think what we now look is obviously the solutions for integration, for more flexibility in the market, demand-side response, and what we can do in infrastructure, which is one of the key parts, but also in further regionalization, putting the markets together. So I think we will get some questions on that. But the first step is done, and we are analyzing the replies, and I think there will be some important discussions ahead of us, like today and in the next weeks.
Okay, thank you, Mechtild. Well, It's with great pleasure I turn to a regulator. This is Marie-Pierre, who is the Belgian energy regulator. What challenges do you see in the electricity market?
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. Well, I think that we have to face with a sort of revolution in the energy sector for the moment. And the key word within this revolution is flexibility. On one hand, flexibility is introduced because of the renewable at the production site. On the other hand, flexibility is needed to allow customers to participate at the demand side. And in between, flexibility on the transport system has to match these two sides. Well, at the same time, we think that regional cooperation has become crucial, with also demand modification to ensure the right regulatory oversight. As you can see, flexibility, cooperation, we have a lot. But as a national regulator, I want to emphasize two things. First, how we can empower customers, and second, how to get the right regulatory oversight. Just a word regarding the empowering of the customer. I was in a meeting in France last week at the CIR. Your CIR is the organization that represents the European Energy Regulator, and we discussed a lot the role of the customer, how to help them, and how to protect them properly. And when I prepare my speech for today, we know at the CREC, the Belgium National Regulator, we wondered if we were asking ourselves the right question. Because we have been focused a lot on giving the customer more and more to right incentive information, but does our average customer, and I'm always speaking about my mother-in-law, for example, understand everything we write and say as regulator? This is a real question. And even after several years of campaign, publicity, and attention, we still notice a lack of involvement from the customer. If we want our customer to exercise his right and become a real player of the EU internal energy market, we need to ask ourselves as regulator if you focus right. Can we do more? Is there any blocking factor? I think that we have to think a little bit more. And I'm very happy that the European Commission really has a new approach, and you can find it in the New Deal for Energy Customer. And if I could summarize what the Commissioner Cagnetti has said, a successful energy union requires the trust of citizens. I believe before the customer feel ready to act on this, all the opportunity now on the energy field, we, the national regulatory authority, must guarantee access to understandable customer focus and readily accessible information. That was regarding the customer what I want to say. Regarding the right regulatory oversight, just last week, you know that Acer and CIR has published a joint feedback on the European Commission public consultation on the new energy market design. We just mentioned that. I want to stress 3 points coming from this document. The first of all, I would like to stress that the full implementation of the internal electricity and gas market legislation involves cross-border regulatory issues. Those issues need to be addressed on the basis of an effective, coordinated, and consistent cross-border regulatory approach. This is really a sensitive issue to be discussed among Acer and the NERA. But I think that we, as national regulator, we must be ready to take one step further. Binding subsidiary instrument, as those, for example, foreseen in the several network code or guideline, could be taken within the framework of Acer, with the reinforcement of the involvement of the Board of Regulator. This is a new role for Acer. It's extremely sensitive among all the NRA, and it's a very sensitive discussion that we have already had and that we will have. Second element regarding the question and the answer that we give to the public consultation, regarding investment. If we want investment to take place in response to price signal on the market, it is imperative that everything is done to make sure that this price signal reflects scarcity. And you know scarcity in Belgium, it's a very sensitive, also a very sensitive issue. In this respect, we need to create short-term market which will regard those who provide the flexibility services with the system need. And thirdly, and I will finish with that, the rule of the DSO. We think that with flexibility, the rule of the TSO must change. And I think that they have to be more involved in the market design, definitely. And if I want to be provocative to finish my speech, what could be the role of the DSO? What could be the role of the TSO? Are there any future? Is there any future for these two, if I can say, organizations? Thank you.
Thank you, Marie-Pierre. And Belgium is a very interesting case in the European market, and we will come back to that. So we've had a view from the Commission, a view from a national regulator, and I'd like now to take a view from Michelle, who is speaking here on behalf of EDF. So the utilities view. Where do you see the challenges for utilities? We heard earlier that the old utility model is dead, all hail distributed renewables. How does a utility like EDF respond to that?
I hope I do not look like a dinosaur. This is not why you ask this question. I always stick to strong colors and a bow tie in order to avoid this image. I hope you didn't make a mistake. I'm going to answer your question, but if you allow, in a slightly indirect way, in the sense that I think that the most difficult thing now for utilities is to adapt to market design. And I would like to come back to a few issues raised by Mechthild. I heard the word revolution. My view is that we do not need a revolution in market design. We rather need a very clear market framework. I would even say we need a strong market economy for the power sector. And this should be based on well-functioning markets, in my view, on three markets. I'll come back to that. We should have very precisely in mind what this is about. This is about competitiveness. What we have to do, we have absolutely no choice, what we have to do in Europe is to decarbonize our economy at an affordable cost. Otherwise, we are not going to be able to compete with the United States or emerging countries that have access to low-cost fossil fuels. And we know that in this process, low-carbon electricity is key. I think most of us agree in this room and outside of this room on this subject. A significant part of this low-carbon electricity, of course, is going to be renewable. And here begins the discussion. Some people say you need a revolution in market design because markets are not going to be able to cope with this amount. It was quoted by Mechthild. I'll come back to that. With this amount of power from renewable sources. I'm not so sure. First of all, I would quote a slightly lower figure than Mechthild, and I would like to suggest that this figure is not really disturbing in terms of markets. It might be slightly lower because we can expect more, I'm sure, from transport and above all from the heat sector. So at the end of the day, we might have something between 40 and 45% renewables in power systems. That is somewhere around 30% from wind and solar. This is manageable. It's manageable, among other reasons, because it doesn't disturb that much the functioning of markets. We are going to have a lot of conventional capacity left. We published a study a few months ago that shows that by 2030 we still will have at least 75% of the current conventional installed capacity. So it's going to be the same type of market, and conventional generation will very often set prices. So under those circumstances, Since what we need, we all need as consumers, as utilities, and as politicians interested in consumers and utilities, what we need is really a competitive energy transition. And competition is exactly what markets are about. So we basically need well-functioning markets. In my view, this is probably one of my very few differences in views with Mechthild, because I agree on most of the rest with her. In my view, three instead of two. That is one for energy, one for emissions, and one for capacity. This is not a revolution. It's a meaningful evolution. It still means a lot of work to do at a European level, particularly if you consider that markets are currently in a very bad shape. So to begin with, I would suggest that it's really urgent to fix the two markets that are really in very, very, very bad shape. That is the carbon market, by achieving as soon as possible the very important structural reform put on the table by the European Commission, and to fix the energy market that is currently jeopardized by oversupply, among other things, by good stated guidelines that should go beyond 2020 and that would be able to fix the energy market. When we get that, I am sure as a utility, since I confirm we are not a dinosaur, I'm quite sure we are going to adapt fairly easily. It will be relatively easy, in particular for EDF, since compared to an average of about 300 and something gram per kilowatt hour average emission factor in Europe, ours is below 100, and in France it's even about 30. So what we have to learn, and I'm sure we are going to do it, is to learn to walk on 2 feet, nuclear and renewable sources. This is very clearly our 2030 strategy. And we are going to work more on energy services to meet the needs of our customers. But again, if we have a good market design that enables a smart pricing system, I'm sure we're able to make it.
Okay, thank you, Michel. Well, so again, the themes of consumers, energy mix, and flexibility, and I will come back to the nuclear and renewables mix later, I think. But I now want to pass to Simon. Michel was quite clear, we don't need a revolution, we need three markets that work well. What's your view?
Well, thank you very much. I mean, one of the challenges we always face with a discussion on reforming electricity markets is to work out exactly what we're talking about. What's the question we're answering? You know, are we talking about supply-side issues, demand-side issues? Are we talking about, as you say, are we talking about big-picture fundamental reform, or are we talking about tinkering at the edges, gilding the lily of the existing mechanism? I think, to my mind, a number of really important contextual changes have happened that aren't often talked about. The first is the role of governments and regulators in energy markets. The IEM was designed on the basis of a market with low or no government involvement. That is manifestly not the case. The market is actually part of a broader policy delivery framework. It cannot be separated from the outcomes it's intended to deliver, or indeed the institutions that are there to deliver those outcomes. It isn't by itself, it isn't where you start in working out how you design markets. How you design markets is one of the things you need to address towards the end of the policy conundrum. So that's the first point. The second point is the issue of integration. The importance of integration in the energy sector. And this isn't just the issue that's often talked about in Europe, which is integration across borders. That is clearly very important. It's also integration along the value chain, between the demand side, the networks, generation, and increasingly integration across sectors, getting something sensible and coherent about decarbonizing heat as well as power. So another way of putting that integration is becoming more important is to say that the costs of ignoring integration are becoming very, very big. Yeah. Now, the third contextual change that I would like to mention is the fact that energy is part of a broader agenda, a broader societal agenda to create a smart, IT-enabled society. Energy is a very important part of that, but there are much wider ramifications that a modern society that we aspire to, the sort of features that that society should have. Now, why is that so important? And to my mind, I think this is perhaps the most important of all the aspects, is if we are interested in creating that smart IT-enabled society, we want it available to everyone. Energy markets are designed on the basis that they will attract a response from those players who are responsive to price signals and the economic incentives that ensue from that. Now, there are customers like that. There are consumers who are prepared to spend the time and the effort to get the right economic outcomes, but they are in the minority, the very significant minority. And if we want to get engagement from a wide spectrum of society, we have to think very differently about markets. So my answer to your question is that we actually have to be quite ambitious. And to put it bluntly, if we end up talking about the mechanisms by which large centrally dispatched generators get paid, we are at best talking about a small part of the problem and at worst talking about yesterday's problem. So just a couple of ideas that I'll float that maybe you want to pick up in conversation. If we're really going to drive true sharing of resources across borders, we need the institutions that are capable of doing that. We need the presumption that member states will want to share resources, and that requires a regional ISO system. Secondly, we need to rethink the consumer choice framework. It has to be the easiest thing for consumers to do to make the right choices for themselves, rather than the situation we have now. It is the most difficult thing for them to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. And again, the themes of consumers and integration coming back there. And I'd like to follow up on the integration aspect now with Marie-Pierre, because you mentioned that Belgium has had a scarcity problem. So we should just say many countries in Europe have an oversupply, which is what Michel was saying earlier, but Belgium's a very good example of what happens when there is scarcity. And we were talking about countries being willing to share their resources. Can you tell us what happened in Belgium?
Well, I'm very happy that you changed the question, because it was about blackout. And it's easier for me to speak about scarcity and not to blackout, because this word is very sensitive in Belgium. That's true that we have a problem of capacity in Belgium. And I'm sorry to say that, but there is no one answer. Oh, why? In Belgium? I think it's not, Belgium maybe is a good model for Europe, but we are not the only one in Europe to have to face with this kind of problem. Well, yes. Yes, I know. Well, I'm the regulator. I'm not representing the government. Regarding this issue, the government has decided to come back on the phasing out of the nuclear, just as a part of the solution to resolve the scarcity. But if you allow me, I just want to put this issue on another point. I think that there is no one solution to resolve the problem of scarcity in Belgium, and we can speak about energy efficiency. I think it could be a part of the solution, but also I think for Belgium, and it's very important. I know this is also something that we have to discuss with other member states. I think that one of the solutions could be to have a real carbon price on a global level. For Belgium, that could be a part of the solution to resolve the problem of the merit order and to resolve the problem of the rentability of the gas power plant. And I discussed this issue with Fatih Birol, the new executive director of the International Energy Agency in Paris. And he said that for Belgium, it could be, if we want to have a level playing field among all the sources of to produce electricity, we have to make a multiplication by 10 of the actual carbon prices to have this kind of level playing field among all the sources. And now I am speaking about renewable, but I am also speaking about coal, nuclear, and gas. And, well, the last thing I want to say is the fact that one of the solutions to resolve this problem of capacity is certainly to the interconnection. And we discussed this issue just before the beginning of this session, and Belgium is not counting on their neighboring country to resolve their problem of capacity. Yes and no, but if we want to develop the interconnection, this is the purpose to count on the overcapacity of some neighboring country of Belgium. And this could be a part of the solution. But there is no one solution. There are plenty of solutions to resolve the problem of capacity in Belgium. And last thing, I'm really looking to have this famous, European energy policy that could help definitely Belgium to resolve its problem of capacity.
Thank you, Marie-Pierre. And I think that leads us back to Mechthild. I mean, one of the things I was trying to bring out there was that Belgium survived last winter by having arrangements with France and Germany in case there was a problem. They told the Belgians only to cook one-pot dinners. That was part of the Belgian solution. Do you see Belgium as being a good model for how it solved its problems so far? And are you expecting the energy union policies to come out, as Marie-Pierre was saying, to help countries like Belgium?
I think what is certainly a good step, if one country isn't looking only at their only national borders and go to the neighbors. I think that's one aspect of our electricity market, that we should foster more regional cooperation. Partly it's happening, but not enough. So for that, we need obviously to change the thinking of some of the governments who are very much afraid of a so-called blackout or some scarcity problems, and we have to think then a little bit abroad. There were some good initiatives, including one from State Secretary of Germany, Barker, who invited what he calls the electricity neighbors in regular meetings, and they came up with some common features how to work together. I think there were roughly 10 member states, plus they invited some non-member states. I think that is a good step, and the Commission is certainly was part of it and will continue to look at that as an example to foster regional cooperation, which is absolutely key. I think it's good to mention the broader context of the energy union, because if we speak about the internal energy market, obviously energy efficiency and all our energy security in the broader sense, research and technology development, all that is part of it, including obviously renewables development, which we already talked about. I would be a little bit less optimistic on the contribution of transport and heating in the near future, which is 2030. It's not the near, medium future. But I think changes will happen, but maybe slower than that. But we are working also on both other sectors, like heating and cooling for communication next year, and on the decarbonization of transport. But I see it a bit more long-term, maybe in terms of changes. I think a couple of things which have been mentioned, if I may, to react. First of all, of Mathieu and the choice of member states. Obviously, energy resources are part of the choices of the member states. What we absolutely want to achieve, that even though member states have already reacted with capacity mechanism, and we know that roughly 12, 13 have one form or another of capacity mechanism, some others, like relatively recently, Germany decided on an energy market only, so there are different views. We have to find common rules for that, and that is one of the challenges we will face when we come up with legislative proposal next year, because we want some common rules on the assessment of capacities, some common rules on infrastructure development, more rules or more powers for ACER as a regulatory body, also for NSOE. So I think there is something to improve on that in order to reconcile a little bit these two camps which exist in the member states right now.
Okay, thank you, Mechthild. So, Michelle, you were saying the ideal would be to have these three markets, energy, capacity, and emissions. I mean, energy and emissions is what we have at the moment, and several countries have capacity markets of some form or another. But Germany is such an important country in Europe when it comes to electricity. If Germany has something different from everyone else, is that the end of an integrated European energy market?
Well, first of all, the question is, what is the issue we want to deal with? The issue we want to deal with is exactly what you said in your previous question. We want to be sure no blackout is going to happen. Now, it depends from a country to another. Some countries are relatively close to a situation where you are going to have to invest in conventional capacity. The United Kingdom, for instance, is not far from that. France is not either. We've got a very small thermal fleet, but whenever one or two plants are phased out, since we need it absolutely for flexibility, then we have to invest very quickly. So these are countries where the issue was bound to be raised before other member states. So my guess is that sooner or later, the French government is going to have a similar approach. Now, we do not approve of capacity mechanisms that would create biases in the trade between member states. We really do not approve of that. And we do not approve of capacity mechanisms that could function as subsidies to fossil fueled plants. There is a word I don't like in the literature written by the European Commission. It's what they call CRMs, which stands for capacity remuneration mechanisms. We are not asking for remuneration. What we like is rather the French type system, which you could call a COM, a capacity obligation mechanism. That means that you have to make sure you have got enough generation for your customers, or if you have not, that somebody else has. This is what a well-designed capacity mechanism is about. If it is well-designed, then the value of capacity is zero when there is enough capacity, and the customer has to pay for variable and fixed cost of the investments and nothing else. There is no win for profit. If a capacity mechanism is well designed, it does not change the merit order of plants. And in that sense, it's not a disturbance to energy markets.
Okay, we will open to the floor for questions in a few moments, so start thinking about it. But I just want to bring in Simon to see whether you are equally confident that capacity mechanisms can solve the problems of the European electricity market in the interim, perhaps.
Well, I think you'll probably guess from my previous contribution that I don't see it as a panacea. I mean, my own thoughts on capacity mechanisms is that the bit that's so often forgotten from the conversation is the consumer side and the value that consumers place on so-called loss of load, and how important that is in determining A, whether you need a capacity mechanism, or B, how much you're prepared to pay for that capacity mechanism. The political reality is that whilst governments are frightened of insufficient capacity, then we will have capacity mechanisms. I've always believed that to be the case. The only way to stop governments being frightened of insufficient capacity is to have an active and responsive demand side to the market. And I think you'll find if you do the sums, you don't actually need that much of the market to respond to price before you find there is negligible need for capacity. And then if you start integrating markets properly, you very soon find that it is an entire non-issue. So, again, my plea to you is don't let this conversation be drowned out by capacity mechanisms. It's interesting, but it really isn't the core issue.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Do you want to come in, Maria, very quickly?
I just want to react because Belgium has decided to implement the strategic reserve. And for me, this is what I call the light CRM that I know. This is a sort of a light CRM. And, well, I think sometimes it's very useful for a time period limited to have this kind of instrument. So I just want to react to this is not la panacea, definitely not. This is not the way to proceed to have an internal energy market, but at some time, for some situation, specific situation, it was the case in Belgium, we have decided to implement this kind of instrument.
Yes. Just very quickly, I first started debating capacity mechanisms back in the 1980s. And the reason the debate has carried on and sustained for so long is there's no right answer. No one can say, no one can prove you need or don't need capacity mechanisms. As I said, but just to be clear what I'm saying, I think the political realities are that until we have an active demand side of the market, we are going to need mechanisms to secure supply. That is, to my mind, the political realities. And our job is to make sure that situation disappears as soon as we possibly can.
Thank you very much. So I'd like to now open the floor to questions. Please raise your hand. One of my colleagues will come to you with a microphone. Identify yourself. And if you have a question to a specific member of the panel, say so as well. So who'd like to go first, please? Yes? Yes. So let's start now with the... Yes, the light, yes, please. Yes, it's very difficult, but I see you. Yes, please, thank you. And then, John, I'll come to you, and other hands are welcome as well.
Hello, this is Peter Teffer, a journalist for EU Observer. I have some questions for Mrs. Fossonnier. When it comes to the capacity problems, as you put it, about Belgium, you say that the Energy Union could help Belgium's problem there. But if you look at some of the reasons they are, for example, the... what's been mentioned in the program, a continuing regulatory uncertainty. I mean, within 10 years, you've had government decisions saying we're going to phase out nuclear, we're going to delay the phase out. So you have all these issues. You have, you know, whether or not the German-Belgian connection is going to... These are all sovereign decisions. So what can the EU level add to that? And secondly, do you believe that, as a regulator, the current situation has improved compared to last year, diminishing the risk of blackouts or brownouts?
Thank you. Marie-Pierre, do go ahead and answer that, and then Mathieu, I'll turn to you as well.
Well, I hope that we could resolve the problem of the capacity on a regional basis. And I just want to jump on what I said a couple of minutes ago on the fact that, first of all, I think that we have to discuss the capacity needs of a regional, on a regional approach. And this is the basis and how to build Europe and how to build the internal, the famous, internal energy market. And the way to proceed is just to discuss the need about capacity at the regional level. And this is a change of mentality, because for Belgium, it's really easy to discuss this issue. But for some big neighboring country of Belgium, this is not obvious to put on the table the result or a long or a middle-term analysis of the capacity. I think that a European Union, Energy European Union, could help us just to open the book and to see the situation, and also to discuss the solution that we are going to take. For example, CRM. If we have decided in Belgium to implement the strategic reserve, I think it is necessary to discuss this issue with the neighboring country. And I think that we have to force the member state to discuss this kind of issue. Definitely, I'm definitely pro-Europe, and I think that Europe can help us to define the solution on a, first of all, on a regional level, and after that, it's a dream, and to have this famous internal energy market. And on your second question, I'm not going to give you an answer because, well, we make a study, and if you want to this study is disponible on our website. It's the study 4054, and engage you to read this study.
Go ahead and read that. But I'm going to turn now to Mathilde, please, the importance of a European-wide strategy on this.
Yeah, I think one point which Marie-Pierre mentioned is quite important, that is also that member states cooperate better. And I think there are already some steps which have been done, like the Electricity Coordination Group, which was only set up after the Fukushima decision, where Germany didn't really consult their neighbors. And that now we have regular, very regular meeting at the electricity. We already had it for gas and oil, but we set that up also for electricity. I think the discussion we had, for example, now on the market design, also with Director Generals for Energy last Friday, a full-day meeting with some good presentations also from professors for different solutions, will also, and the answers which we have to read now from the public consultation. I think we should balance a little bit when we say the progress made or no internal electricity markets. As I said before, there had been a lot has been done on the market coupling for day ahead. And that is surprisingly a lot of member states, not yet all, but hopefully soon all. There's still obviously obstacles in the intraday and in the balancing markets, which we have to remove. And that is another step we have to take together with the member states, with the regulators, and all concerned. So I think, and another aspect obviously which was mentioned is infrastructure. We have a strong development of renewables in all our member states, but the infrastructure is not following. So we need more cross-border infrastructure. We have a target of 10% of the electricity capacity, which should be infrastructure. We know that 2/3 of our member states fulfill that target, but we have what we call a little bit energy islands, like in the south with Spain, Portugal, and France, where there are not enough interconnectors. We have it with the Baltic states, which in the electricity side are synchronized to the east and not to the west. And we have some other issues here. One step here is obviously the project of common interest, where we are finalizing now the second list. And one key aspect in the selection of these projects of common interest is energy security. So we will really look where it's needed, and projects are mature, and help to improve the situation on the infrastructure side also.
And if I'm not mistaken, the famous Juncker plan has quite a lot of focus on these infrastructure interconnections, right?
No, I mean, on infrastructure, we have set up what we call the Connecting Europe Facility, CEF, for energy, transport, and IT. That where we will co-finance the project of common interest. FC is there for the next 3 years for big projects on growth. We are quite lucky. Energy is one of the top priority, but it's a lot on energy efficiency, renewables, and infrastructure. So far, the first 5 out of 9 projects are in the energy sector, and one is infrastructure, but the other ones are on renewables and energy efficiency in Denmark, France, Spain, and so on. So we have some good first signals also from the FC fund. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Question from John, and please, other questions are welcome at this stage as well.
Thank you, John Cooper from Fuels Europe. I'm not an expert in electricity markets. I think I'm 2 steps ahead of my mother-in-law. But I still think it would be helpful for us to help try and focus this conversation to talk about what physical changes will actually result from a redesigned electricity market. And I'd like to invite any of the panel to comment on a particular case study in Europe recently, and that is the events in Germany that caused backing out of nuclear and then move to construction of coal-fired power stations. What is it about the current market that facilitated that, and what would be different around a new market that we hope to move to that would affect the business cases behind those decisions?
Right. Thank you, John. Simon, would you like to take that up?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the obvious answer to that is if we have a genuine sharing of resources across member states, we need far less of them. So we would be using, certainly over the next 10 or so years, we would need far less fossil capacity, and that fossil capacity would be able to run much more efficiently at a much higher utilization. Win, 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 win. Yeah, it's a really, really important and significant outcome. And it won't happen through market coupling. Market coupling is gilding around the edge. We need the sort of resource planning decisions to be optimized. The other sort of outcomes that seem to me to be hugely important that we should start thinking about now is making sure that we deliver at a local level sensible outcomes that make use of consumer resource, that make sure we're making sensible decisions on heat infrastructure, that make sure we're making sensible decisions on local distribution network infrastructure, and recognize that those are going to be different, not just across Europe, but from city to city within individual countries. And somehow or other, there's a real issue of devolution here, which is an opportunity, I think, for Europe to say that it can let go when the needs of letting go are actually there. Just finally, on your point about Germany and coal-fired power stations, in a former life, I actually worked for a large German utility. Funnily enough, at that time, and I can the coal-fired power stations were being built, and I can tell you all sorts of stories about that. But the most important thing to say is that actually, the decisions to build the coal-fired power stations preceded the nuclear phase-out quite significantly, so they weren't a consequence of that. But the what market design can do is it can actually, as I say, overall reduce the need for those balancing assets to help keep a stable system with that's based on renewables.
Michelle, would you like to...
Yes, I'm very glad you asked this question, because I think it's really the most fundamental question. What is changing when you change the market design, and how can you change the market design in order to return to something more sensible? And I'm sure that precisely a well-functioning market system is the answer of such absurd situations. We are now living in a very strange world. Unfortunately, we are getting used to it. We should not. In a very strange world where, for instance, a German consumer, when he buys a megawatt hour of electricity, pays about €4 for carbon and €60 for renewable tax. When we get a market-oriented system again, we might experience prices, carbon prices, that are in the order of magnitude of what we had before the crisis. If we had this order of magnitude, then the merit order of the plants would be changed. As soon as €20 per ton carbon price, a very efficient gas-fired plant is dispatched before a very old coal-fired plant. And the higher the price, the more systematic this switch. So what we have to implement again is well-functioning markets, and it's not going to be more costly. What we should aim at would be a situation where we would pay slightly more, a bit more than €6 or €5 for carbon, and hardly anything for policy costs.
Mathieu, please.
Well, I can agree on the points made just now on Mathieu. One thing is obviously the carbon price, and we are now having on the table a revised ETS proposal. We hope that Council and Parliament will discuss and decide and adopt it as quickly as possible. The sooner the better. And I think it's a matter of timing. I mean, we are just now redoing our reference scenario and the carbon price. We have to revise it. It's always difficult. It's not a forecast. Anyhow, it's a scenario. But we have to give some indication where we think it's going. And I would agree it will change over time. The question is now, from now, in the couple of years, and Germany has the issue of more coal than ever before and CO2 emissions, and they have done some first steps, which we are looking into it also from a state aid point of view, by the way.
Thank you. Eberhard, you had a question? Please, Leticia. Just put up your hand, Eberhard. Are there any other... If I can't see because of the light, just... Okay, Mark, yes. Yeah.
I listened to this very interesting debate with a great measure of frustration, I must say. I know a little bit about the electricity market and electricity, a little bit more than the normal consumer, because electricity, of course, is not something that matters very much for the normal consumer. The consumers, we don't care whether electricity pays. Does everybody know the rate that he pays? Probably not even you know. No, of course. No, but my question is, or what the conclusion that I draw is that the electricity market among the 28 is a total confusion. Everybody does what it wants. There is anything but something that you can call a single European electricity market. I don't know whether we will reach that stage in 2030 or in 2050 or never, but I hope one time we will, thanks to your work. Now, my question is, the prices...
Quick question, Eberhard, please. Quick and good.
Is there still a member state that grants individual subsidies to its consumers? Or do we have no longer member state subsidies?
Thank you. I'll give the floor to Mark. Mark, also, please be brief, because I'd like to turn to the panel and wrap up this session. Please.
Thank you. Comment and question. Comment is the Belgian issue, which dare not speak his name, is the fact that Belgium relies for most of its electricity on 7 nuclear plants, and most of those have been broken down for some years now. So I think that needs to be acknowledged.
Question?
We can't deal with the future unless we acknowledge what the situation is on the ground today. The question, and I suppose this tries to wrap up the whole debate, and it's addressed to Mechtild. Mechtild, how confident are you that there will be a legislative proposal next year on electricity common rules? And second part, can you give any example of any provision the Commission might include in such a bill? Thank you.
I'm actually going to give you the floor last to wrap up. I'm going to start now with Marie-Pierre, if you'd like to come in on any of the comments raised by participants or also by your fellow panelists. This is your moment. Seize it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't want to... One thing that we have to keep in mind, I'm sorry, I'm not going to answer to your question on nuclear.
You don't have to.
You know, it's a very political, sensitive question. Well, something that I have in my mind, and we have no discussion on this issue, is really the rule of the TSO and the DSO. If at the end of the day we have customer acting a real rule in the energy world, we are going to have self-supporting customer more and more. And on the same time, we ask the TSO and the DSO to invest in infrastructure. And my question is, we have to be very cautious to ask TSO and DSO to invest just to avoid to have stranded asset at the end of the day. And what could be the future? I have no answer to give you today regarding this issue, but it's for me really, really a very sensitive and very big question that I have in mind. How to avoid stranded asset, but to be sure that we go to the integrated market, that you have the proper interconnection. And there, I think that we have to find an equilibrium.
So we have a real enthusiastic supporter of the energy union here. So very good. Michel, would you like to comment?
Just a word on some remarks that were made by the audience.
We were asked whether or not we knew what the price of our electricity is. I would like to tell you I know perfectly well what the retail prices are in my country and in some neighboring countries. In my country, a household pays about 150 euro per megawatt hour, and in a neighboring country with a very strong economy, he pays 300 euro per megawatt hour. And I think this brings us back to what the main issue should be. Our main concern should be how can we use this extraordinary tool that low-carbon electricity is in order to organize a competitive transition towards different types of energy. And there is one of the issues we did not address. I think it's a pity. It's about integrating renewable energy. My company invests more and more in renewable sources. I said we were walking on 2 feet. If you look back at the last 2 or 3 years, we invested exactly the same amount in new builds in renewable sources and in nuclear. And if we do that, it's because we're convinced it is true that costs are going to decrease. We have, not in Europe, unfortunately, we would need a little more wind. We have in some countries outside of Europe wind energy projects that are profitable without any subsidy. Without any subsidy. We have some in Turkey, we have some in Mexico, for instance. And in some parts of the United States, we are not far from developing projects in solar, ground-mounted solar, large plants, that are very close, not to retail prices, but to costs of conventional generation. This is going to happen sooner or later. This is about huge volumes of energy. Whether it's 30% or 40%, let's not discuss about. It's about huge volumes, and we cannot imagine an efficient organization of the markets if we do not tackle the issue of integrating them in markets. I'm convinced it's possible, and I'm sure it's one of the main topics the European Union is going to work on in the next decade, and suddenly we will stand on their side, and we would like very much a success in this field.
Simon, so wind in our sails?
The issue of subsidy, and we don't want subsidies. I put in mind at the moment the UK government has a policy that it would support solar PV and onshore wind as long as there isn't a subsidy. And that set the economists going, well, what on earth does that mean? And all sorts of numbers are coming up at the moment. And, you know, we mustn't fall into this trap of thinking economics is a science. It isn't. It's a best a social science, and more in more reality, it's an art, actually. It's very difficult to work out what no subsidy means. I didn't understand the question, actually, about consumers, but it did put in mind one thing that I haven't mentioned that I think is really important. It seems to me there are two really important political issues that need to be grappled if we are going to drive forward the single market project. The first is that member states must be prepared to set out their energy plans in a transparent way and ideally subject those to some level of independent scrutiny and analysis, not in any way, obviously, preventing them from doing what they want, but externalizing those debates which are so often internal and are very difficult for the market to understand. The second issue is the issue of cost allocation. And this isn't just, although it is importantly, how do you allocate costs between member states, if you are sharing resources, if you are having a common resource adequacy standard, how do you share those costs amongst member states? Also, very importantly, how do you share costs across consumers? As we drive an energy transition forward, we're increasingly encountering some serious equity issue where, in effect, the poor are paying an awful lot of money for the wealthy to fit new devices to their homes. So how do you deal with those cost allocation issues, both at an international and a societal level?
Thank you for that. Misha, please.
Yeah, thank you. I think on the renewable side, obviously, I think we have seen it already that prices have gone down, in particular for solar and onshore wind, and I think they will become sooner or later market competitive. So we have already here a situation where markets are working. On the offshore side, I think that will take a little bit more time. But we have also our state aid guidelines. They were mentioned where we introduced certain steps 2017 with the auctioning and then further on. And we will have a new set, which we will prepare in due time. On the changes which will come up, first of all, I think next year will be quite a heavy year on what we prepare. And the challenge will be that everything, in a way, is interlinked. So when we speak about legislative changes, we certainly think about the electricity directive and regulation, the electricity security of supply, the renewables directive. We can include the energy efficiency directive revision, which might come a bit earlier, on the legislative side. Then, obviously, this is also linked to our communication on the 15% on infrastructure, which will also come next year, and the whole point on governance. Governance in the sense what role ESA will play, and what role NSOE, and then a bit broader, the governance of the whole energy union. As I said, we are looking on the origin of legislative texts in the electricity sector, in particular now for end of next year. But as the strong interlinkage is there with the renewables directive, this will be done at the same time, and most likely with a proper common impact assessment. But it's challenging because, I mean, we also have to play with different scenarios and to reflect that it won't be easy. But I think we will have enough time to discuss it and prepare it. We have also the outcome, then the results of the sector inquiring on the capacity mechanisms where DG Comp is working on and we do that then together, and that will impact this impact assessment and the future work. So I think I cannot yet say which articles. I think regional cooperation and how to foster that and translate that will be certainly one aspect. Thanks.
Thank you, Mathilde. So essentially another interesting year ahead for Europe's electricity markets. So we only had a short time to discuss something. We could have gone into much more detail on so many more areas, but it's been a very interesting discussion. And I would just like to thank you all for coming and to ask you to thank our panelists.
And a final word from me. On the 12th of November, we have the official Brussels launch of the IEA World Economic Outlook 2015. So I look forward to seeing all of you here again. Thank you very much.